The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to Infrastructure Report. This is Mike Consul with Chase McWhorter, the Managing Director of Institutional Investing in Infrastructure. And it has been travels with Chase McWhorter in recent weeks. Chase, you've been on the road. You recently wrote a market perspective piece in the magazine reflecting on the events and meetings that you've attended over the past month as you've been traveling around the country, perhaps the world. So you let us in on this. What events have you attended? Give us a kind of an update on what you're finding, where you've been, what events you've attended, and also kind of the state of the art right now, what you're, in terms of what you're hearing in the infrastructure space.
No, yeah, that's in talking with our editor, Drew Campbell, I do write the market perspective fairly regularly, and we were just discussing topics, and we kind of came to the idea of, with the amount of travel I do, the amount of conversations we can kind of have candidly with the investor community, we just gives us a unique perspective. So yeah, for the July-August issue of I3, we just decided to do the market perspective and maybe do it more regularly, just focused on kind of a notes from the road, so to speak, just reflecting on conversations, general themes. So really since May, some of the events we've been to is we were in New York, probably about a month and a half ago, actually maybe less than that. But anyway, we just hosted an informal roundtable with some managers, investors, consultants. And then a couple weeks ago, we had VIP Infrastructure in Toronto. That's our annual conference. So we had VIP Infrastructure. And then the week after that, I went to, it's called the Equilibrium Forum. It's a small conference thrown by one of the fund managers, Equilibrium Capital. Actually did a podcast with Dave Chen, their chairman, while I was there. And then actually right now I'm talking to you from Chicago at the Pacific Pension Institute's summer roundtable. So yeah, in the last maybe month and a half, definitely been some good conferences, good meetings. So yeah, that's at least where I've been so far.
Well, talk about some of the overarching themes that have come out of these, both the conferences and also maybe some of the individual meetings. You mentioned that you did a podcast with Dave Chen, which has been published, and regarding that the Equilibrium Forum. So what are you finding out there in terms of themes and perhaps even some overarching theme that you're hearing repeated?
ESG is still, it's a growing topic. Even at the Equilibrium Forum, they just showed some statistics as far as just the growth of investors, managers, having those metrics that they're looking at.
And just for newbies, Chase, just for the newbies, ESG meaning environment, social, and governance. Did I get that right?
Yeah, environmental, social, governance. Really, it's just kind of a set of standards just to make sure that fund managers, investors, that the assets they're investing in are kind of adhering to some of those metrics that aren't just financial, that if you have a 20% IRR, but you're destroying the environment, that would knock you down on the E part, and maybe some investors would shy away from you. So those standards.
And why is ESG the standard so big right now? Is it I mean, generally, when you're talking about fund managers and such, number one is returns.
Mm-hmm.
Does ESG actually generate superior returns, or is this a social conscience that's being baked into the cake?
Well, I mean, and this is where some listeners might be pulling out their hair, because there's definitely still debate out there. I mean, people that are firmly in the ESG camp will say all day, you don't have to risk returns for adhering to ESG standards. A lot of investors are concerned that they would potentially impact their returns, which would impact their duty as a fiduciary. I think that's where a lot of the issues come in, is that some investors say, my number one duty is I'm a fiduciary. I generate returns for retired teachers, public employees. That's my only objective. And the ESG crowd will say that you don't have to risk returns to be conscious and benchmark against ESG standards. I think, and this is where kind of some of the discussions are going from even these conferences just in the last year compared to last year, is the discussions are at least becoming more granular from kind of the asset management level. I think a great example is from VIP Infrastructure. Because for the last few years, all the discussions about ESG, at least from what I've heard, they can get very theoretical, and it does come off as just, yeah, this would be great in a perfect world kind of thing. But as far as specifically what you're going to do to improve your ESG metrics, that's where, at least from past years, going to different conferences, talking to different people, you don't hear a lot of kind of specific things that they're going to do. So at VIP Infrastructure, it was brought up. One of the investment managers going to see one of their assets, talking to leadership on site, and they're getting told how important ESG is to them at this facility. So the investment manager goes and starts the asset management, the asset manager within the fund manager. He goes to tour the site, and he starts talking to just guys on the floor. Sounded like it was maybe a port terminal, and basically pointed out, from a social standard, taking care of your employees, he pointed out where this guy was offloading equipment from a truck. He's just explaining, this seems like a pretty dangerous spot, just the way you're having to hang over this, and should there be like a railing here to kind of help you? And the employees were kind of like, yeah, we talked about it, but it just kind of came down to, it's too expensive. So that's where you can hear and talk about ESG all day, but you've got to get pretty granular and actually go visit the assets and make those decisions. And once you implement those, again, there is a cost associated with it. I think that's where I see and hear the conversation going, is you're at least getting more granular. I think we'll be able to really see, is there a big cost to ESG outside of just reporting, if it becomes more active asset management? You have these, again, as simple as putting in a rail to protect your employees. How much of those costs are going to add up? What will that do to the bottom line? And again, I'm not advocating that we don't protect employees. I'm just saying these are costs that we're going to have to evaluate and really get into seeing how ESG evolves, what the costs are. So that was just something interesting from VIP, was it seems like it's becoming more asset level granular discussions, not just, yeah, we should get away from coal and promote diversity within our companies.
Right. So we're looking at a standard that, it sounds very much like the jury's still out on that, but that's certainly mm-hmm. been the talk of the industry. ESG is popping up everywhere. I mean, it's the talk of not just infrastructure, it seems. So what else is, other than ESG, what else has been pretty prominent on the minds of the people you've been associating with?
I'd say outside of that, just ESG being a big broad topic, I'd say getting down to kind of the specific sectors, I think you're definitely seeing broadly looking at energy, interest in renewables, but still concerns about renewable pricing right now. Within energy, the discussion of pipelines, and not only from the increase that I think investors see of these publicly listed MLPs going private. In May, Buckeye Partners was acquired by IFM. So I think investors at VIP were saying they think this is going to become more regular. Again, you have a lot of capital being raised on the infrastructure fund side, the private equity fund side. You have a lot of MLP assets that are underpriced right now. So I think you could see a lot more of that going on in the energy sector. I think the other thing that's interesting is the digital side. So telecom cell towers, rolling out of 5G. But one thing that's pretty interesting that we discussed at VIP as well was the rise of data centers in infrastructure portfolios. It's kind of a push and pull between real estate and infrastructure, kind of who's going to win. And I think we've kind of just said it's ultimately just going to come down to the investors. Where do they want to put it?
What bucket do they want to put it in?
Exactly.
So let's get specific about this with each of these events, because you mentioned that was a VIP out in Toronto. But let's take these one by one. Let's start with the I3 Infrastructure Roundtable in New York. Why don't you give us some elaboration on that? Can you give a little more detail about what happened there or what was discussed there?
Yeah, that conversation, and I guess just to preface kind of what we're doing there, because we have VIP Infrastructure, which is an event we produce. We have the I3 Editorial Advisory Board meeting. That's an event we produce. And then what we're doing with these, we're calling them kind of informal roundtables, is we did it in New York in May. We did it in October. I think we're going to do it in Southern California in October this year. But it's essentially just kind of a way to get a state of the industry kind of update. When you have two main events that are the editorial board in November, conference in June, and it's a lot of time between getting these groups together. So our objective is to kind of between that time, maybe fill a gap and bring 10 people together, same kind of audience, investors, consultants, managers, bring them together in a conference room in New York, and we meet for 2 to 3 hours, and it's just a small round table, just firing through a few different topics. So the I3 round table, the informal round table that we held in May, really, I think one of the key things that came out of that was essentially this energy transition. Concerns about pipeline assets. Are they going to be stranded assets as we move more towards a renewable energy market?
So are there other uses for those pipelines? Did that come into the conversation? So let's say, I mean, we're pretty far off, really, it would seem anyway, although things always happen faster than we think. We make the move, let's say, to nuclear and renewables, or at least renewables, since nuclear seems to be so complicated these days in terms of the legal, public opposition and lawsuits and all that. But if some of those pipelines were to come offline for oil and gas, was there any discussion about how they could be repurposed in some way that's useful?
Yeah, I mean, some of the discussion is things like water. You could transport water through it. And I think really... I think Drew wrote for I3, it would have been in the April issue. It was specifically talking about these stranded assets. How do you phase them out? Some maybe won't be useful at all. It's trying to find the next best use. As of right now, a lot of the discussion is it seems like it's such a long horizon before renewables could really replace things like oil and gas, specifically gas. I mean, gas is cleaner. So these can be just natural gas pipelines. And again, you don't want to, the discussion is also, you don't want to be stuck there with the big coal plant that's obviously being phased out. But I think that's where it's a pretty long horizon. Some of the discussions probably 30 years down the line, but out of that meeting and as we're discussing these stranded assets, one of the people brought up basically the statistics of, and I could be wrong, but basically still globally, it's, I think we're 92% still oil and gas that provides our energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're definitely building more wind and solar farms, but I think it's a long horizon, regardless of states like California, New York, making these pushes to renewables. It just, the numbers show that you're in the 90s of energy consumption is needing to be oil and gas. Mm-hmm. But then that did segue into the appetite amongst the investor community for renewables, mm-hmm. that there's still obviously an intense appetite for renewables, but the issue there is valuations. How much more risk are they taking on to get the returns that they can justify for renewables? That it's no longer just buying existing assets. They're now having to take construction risk, then development risk, to get these assets to squeeze out the kind of numbers that they need, for these wind and solar projects. Vaguely discussed, was what we also discussed at VIP Infrastructure was, the data center push, the data being the new oil. So I think that was the discussion that was at the I3 roundtable. I think those were the main ones, was this energy transfer, talking about pipelines, but also transitioning to data and how much more data our economy is relying upon, how necessary data is for today's economy. And someone actually had brought up, and it got repeated at VIP Infrastructure as well, is it was termed this necessity trap that can be maybe a slippery slope if you're just defining infrastructure as something that's necessary. So data being necessary for an economy, let's think about it if it's actually for infrastructure. So just some interesting discussions there.
So energy is a big, I mean, when you talk about the different, the stripes of infrastructure, energy is obviously a very big one that investors are looking at. It's obviously investable for one thing, unlike not every mm-hmm. form of infrastructure is investable, but clearly energy is investable. Data centers, clearly investable. Was there any talk about it not strictly being infrastructure, or is it just pretty well accepted that this is part of the backbone of our economy these days? As you were saying, data is the new oil. I just haven't traditionally heard data centers brought up as infrastructure, but everybody's just kind of on board with that idea that data centers is part of infrastructure. Is that right?
I don't think it's firmly in the infrastructure bucket yet. You talk to investors, you talk to some managers that are also talking to investors, and I mean, it's as simple as a lot of times that you might go in talking to the real estate guys and they say, you need to go talk to my infrastructure guys. There's a lot of kind of specified asset management that's needed, the energy, all the technicality that goes into a data center. It's just a unique animal that I think a lot of investors right now are viewing as more part of their infrastructure bucket. I don't think it's firmly in there yet, but it does seem, and again, we might just be in our own bubble here talking about it, but it at least seems to me that it's moving in that direction.
You know, the thing is that there's so much money flowing towards data centers, and not necessarily from people who consider themselves to be in the infrastructure space. And yet there's so much infrastructure that is unfunded right now. There's a lot of private money sitting on the sidelines saying, where do I go ahead and invest this money? Where's the opportunity? If it starts to get funneled towards data centers, it seems like it may not be available for some of the traditional meat and potatoes infrastructure, such as airports and seaports, roads and bridges, and water, wastewater systems, and drinking water systems, and all that. I don't know whether that's a concern or not, but if the definition of infrastructure becomes broadened, then all of a sudden there's just so many different places to put the money, and maybe there's not enough for the stuff that's strictly infrastructure, traditionally been thought of as infrastructure, and that we need so badly, not only in this country in terms of retrofitting, but just around the world in terms of brand spanking new infrastructure in countries that are developing.
Well, I think that's even a broader point that I think you're touching on is just how much money is being raised in infrastructure. I mean, it's going to be another record year. There's tons of money being raised.
What is that figure? Do you have a ballpark? I didn't ask you to have those numbers in front of you, but do we know how much is going to be was raised in 2018? How much we expect to get raised in 2019?
I don't have it in front of me right now, but 2017 was 74. 2018 was 80, mid 80s. And then I think the projections for this year were well over 100.
Well over $100 billion.
So again, it's just growing. The cash is piling up, all the dry powder everybody talks about. And I think that's where you see things like data centers moving in there. And I think that speaks to there's also the gap between what's an investable infrastructure asset that, we have a lot of bridges that need to be fixed, but how many of those can you make money on? I think there's only so many ports that can be invested in. Airports, there's not as many assets out there that can be invested in until certain things change. I think investors are going to look for other, and that's not to say that data isn't firmly as necessary as other infrastructure. I mean, again, I think that's where, even if we did have it completely open in, say, the US, that all of a sudden there's tons of water investments that could be made and ports and airports and all these investment opportunities open up, I still personally think, and you hear a lot of the discussion, I still think data centers would fit in there pretty well. Just again, it is very crucial to our economy. I mean, even actually at PPI today, I overhear this discussion at our table. We're talking about as an investor in India in real estate, and the discussion was just the infrastructure not being built up. All these brand new buildings are going up, but the infrastructure to them isn't there. And someone kind of jokingly said, well, as long as it's a well-connected building to the internet and it's got data capacity, all this stuff, it's like, do we really even really need a road to it anymore? I mean, said half jokingly, but right. It does.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of make it, you think. It falls into, I've said it before that it's almost as though our economy is becoming more and more metaphysical. There's so much product, so many things that everything from music to money, to books that don't exist in physical form anymore. It's accessible, but they're not physical anymore. So which is pretty amazing how as I say, metaphysical or intangible, maybe we could say the economy is becoming, and yet at the same time, developing, creating so much wealth and creating these vast new middle classes and particularly in Asia and so on. So before I wander too far afield, you were talking about VIP infrastructure. I was going to move to the EQ forum, unless there's anything else you needed to add about VIP infrastructure out there in Toronto. Did anything else to add there, or should we move on to EQ forum?
I think one thing that I did find interesting, I mean, I obviously found everything at VIP Infrastructure very interesting.
Naturally.
Great, great people that produced that event, I gotta say. But in the closing remarks, one thing that did get brought up just as surprises from just recapping the conference itself, one of the consultants brought up, he was surprised there wasn't more discussion around tech. And kind of everybody looked around, and technologies, at least in the last few years, it's always a discussion. One thing I think we actually discussed it last year is, and it was brought up at VIP, was I think that one of the issues with tech is it's just become so theoretical, and the discussions don't really break down what the tech is going to disrupt. That you're talking about self-driving cars and building information modeling in the same discussion. You're talking about macro trends and ways to improve asset management. It's just the spectrum is, I think, too broad in the tech discussion. So I think that's something
to at just least brought up is just it's too broad to just say technology, because yeah, so if you say data centers, obviously that's technology, but it's focused.
Yeah, it's and that's a specific sector, and you are addressing the shift in the economy becoming more data driven. But I think when you get to tech, there's groups that work in the technology space that, again, they're doing building information modeling, which is a way to improve the actual asset on the ground. In tech, you talk about self-driving cars. It's like, well, how is that going to impact my parking structure investment? So it's very macro. So I think it's almost like the tech discussion needs to be broken up into pieces. How can you use tech to improve investor reporting? How can you use tech to improve asset management? How do you discuss tech from the macro level? What are the big tech trends of, again, self-driving cars, things like that? So I think that conversation needs to be broken down. And I hope that the conversation isn't over because there's been so many discussions that just go off the rails because you have all these different quote unquote tech people up there talking about how they're going to change the world. And it's like, well, we need to break this up so investors, managers can wrap their heads around what aspect of technology are we talking about? Are we talking about the disruptive asset or disruptive technology that's going to impact our entire portfolio? Are we talking about efficiency technology, mm-hmm. things, again, like BIM that are going to improve asset management? So I think that's where the discussion needs to be maybe refocused to bring that conversation back, because I don't think you want to lose sight of technology broadly. I just think you can have kind of an attrition when you're just going in so many different directions. Right. So that was something interesting that we didn't discuss mm-hmm. at VIP Infrastructure.
What about the EQ Forum? Equilibrium Forum. What city did you say that was in?
That one's in San Francisco. So again, that one's put on by Equilibrium Capital. And they started doing it. I want to say this is their eighth year doing it. They bring in a pretty similar audience. They'll bring in some of their operating companies. So they do stuff in agriculture, infrastructure. So they bring in some of their portfolio businesses. They bring in consultants, investors, academics. And it's a pretty high-level discussion. But a lot of it does circle around sustainability, ESG, things like that, because that's Equilibrium's focus is – yeah, doing mm-hmm. those kind mm-hmm. of investments. So a lot of discussion on, ESG, how it's evolving, examples of the reporting, asset management. So again, and that's where it even segued into the discussions at VIP Infrastructure, is all of these things, because I went to Equilibrium Forum the year before, and this year, maybe it was just me, it just seemed like the conversations are getting more granular. That you're actually really getting into how to implement things rather than, well, this is what we wish we could do. This is a perfect world ESG portfolio. This is all the things you need to do. It's it's kind of like, okay, well, what are we actually doing? And actually on the at VIP infrastructure, one of the people on stage, I mean, he kind of blatantly just said, he's like, a lot of it that what I hear, he's like, it's just bullshit for my language. But I mean, he's the one that said it on stage. I'm just quoting him just because he just saw a lot of talk and it wasn't really anything being done. It's just, you're talking about it, but what are you actually doing? Mm-hmm. So, again, going back to the EQ forum, it just seemed like there was more discussion on how not just them, but other groups are actually implementing certain ESG standards and processes and things like that. So that was a big focus there. So yeah, it was.
So you contrasted the 2018 versus 2019 EQ forum discussion. So let's carry that theme to let's broaden that theme. What have you seen so far in 2019 vis-a-vis 2018? How has the conversation changed just generally in the infrastructure space? Has anything surprised you this year versus last year? Or what kind of conversational changes are you hearing?
Probably if I had to pick two or three things, I'd say, I think we even kind of touched on them. One has been kind of a drop off in hearing about technology. Again, I don't think people are not thinking about it. I don't think that people aren't making sure that they're factoring it in. I just was a little surprised. There's just not more discussion around it. Maybe it's attrition or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I would say part of it being a drop off in those discussions circulating around technology in all levels. And then again, we touched on it, but I think just the rapid embrace of data centers. And not again that they haven't been fully embraced, but mm-hmm. just how quickly it seems that the discussion is moving, and investors, again, being some of the ones that are really pushing it, that I'd say those are probably two of the bigger surprises that I've seen. Another thing, and this is maybe even just in the last month or two, I know it hasn't just come out, but at least it seems like it's gaining more traction because you touched on nuclear. I think that there is at least curiosity, interest in the nuclear space in the way that it could be done in this kind of smaller scale, the kind of just district nuclear energy, that you're not having these mega power plants, but you're having just small, I don't know what the exact scale would be, but I mean, you could have base discussion, just our aircraft carriers. Like, they have their own mini nuclear plants on there that they can obviously control and maintain. And if something were to happen, it would be a lot easier to manage than something like Fukushima. So I think that's something that seems to be gaining traction, again, within the last month or two, at least just stuff that I've seen and heard, is that going to retake off? Is nuclear going to come back?
Well, there's certainly a lot of talk about it. And I will say that we did have a podcast a while back about nuclear energy. And one of the proposals from our guest, it wasn't his proposal, but he pointed to it, was the government actually having a design for a nuclear power plant, saying, this is the design, this is the scale, this is the technology. And they have a plant where there's where the plants are fabricated and shipped to their locations. So because okay. once you have one design, instead of reinventing it, mm-hmm. you can really hold the cost down and you can crank out the plants very quickly and then spread them out throughout the country. One of the points that he made is that he said, look, I'm all for renewables, mm-hmm. but we can't possibly scale up solar and wind as quickly as we can nuclear. So nuclear mm-hmm. could at least be an intermediary step. And, you know, there's countries like France that gets 80% of its power from nuclear. Taiwan gets
85% of its power from nuclear. It's a huge opportunity for the United States that we are absolutely whiffing on. It's sad to see.
Yeah.
Time is getting a little short here, Chase. So let me go to a final question for you. I just want to kind of look ahead. What's on the calendar for the second half of 2019? You obviously have been a road warrior since joining the company. The second half of 2019, I'm sure there's going to be plenty going on. What do you see down the road?
Definitely got a few things on the agenda, and yeah, hopefully do another one of these recaps, unless we get feedback that nobody cares.
we'll make a scintillating. Everybody will care. It will be a scintillating discussion.
No, I do think that the general thought of just, I mean, overall us being objective third party, we have different discussions. So we just get different feedback. And I think that's, again, the reason for wanting to do these recaps is just highlighting, without naming names, just some of the things that we're hearing from the investor community. So that being said, a couple things on the agenda. Actually headed out to in September, there's that Super Return Infrastructure Conference in London. I'll be there. And then heading down to actually our Institutional Real Estate Europe's editorial board, because it's the week after. So heading down to that after the Super Return Infrastructure Conference. And then October, and I think I mentioned it earlier, we're going to do another one of the just informal roundtables in Southern California. And then we have the I3 Editorial Advisory Board meeting in Chicago in November 5th to the 7th. So those are kind of the main events going on. I do always preface it. I'm sure our listeners, some of the fund managers that are infinitely more road warriors than I am. I mean, I talk to some of these guys, it's just 3 weeks on the road all over the world. I mean, yeah, kudos to them. I don't complain about my travel. Let's just say that after I talk to a lot of the people we work with.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right. Well, listen, we'll call it a wrap then, Chase, and I will be back in touch with you shortly in the near future here. Thanks for the roundup.
Thank you, Mike.